from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, gentlemen, let's go out to one of our favorites. That's Jonathan Mayo. He covers prospects for MLB.com, MLB Pipeline. .com and does a fabulous job of it. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. You're on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Did the Pirates get significantly better with their ads, primarily Kiner Falefa and De La Cruz?
I don't know what the definition of significant is. I think they upgraded in places that they needed to, without, you know, raiding the cupboard, the prospect cupboard too dramatically. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, they probably, I don't know what the asking price may have been for some of the larger ticket bats that, you know, had been discussed, or even some of the high-end pitchers, but I don't know that the price would have been in on that, and the price was too high. So, you know, they were able to keep their elite-level prospects and make their big league roster better at the same time.
Are there are there a couple of any of the guys that they gave away? You know, I mean, obviously, all we can do is read prospect ranking lists and try and guess. Are any of those guys that, you know, have the kind of ranking or grading that, you know, they may become legitimate major leaguers?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of them will become legitimate major leaguers. They didn't trade anyone who I think is in that camp of, oh, 5 years from now, they're going to regret the day that they let him go. But, you know, like Patrick Riley, who they traded to the Orioles, has a big arm, but he probably ends up in the bullpen when all is said and done. Charles McAdoo, you know, has already exceeded expectations as a 13th rounder from last year's draft. I think he can hit a little bit, but maybe he's probably a fourth outfielder. I mean, yeah, he may be a little bit better than that when all is said and done, but I think in most of the instances when the Pirates sent prospects away, they were taking guys who they kind of found, I don't want to say out of nowhere, but like late round picks or small dollar figure international signees like Luis Peralta, they traded to the Rockies to bring in big league pieces. So I don't think you're going to look back and say like, oh boy, that guy ended up being a superstar 5-6 years down the road. Although, you know, been doing this long enough to never say never.
Jonathan, one thing on McAdoo, a lot of people like to think that maybe he caught lightning in a bottle, or maybe he was a guy who was one of the fastest risers in the system. I know your re-rank is coming out soon. Where would he have been in the updated Pirates top 30 rankings, and why should people be okay with the Pirates giving him up in this deal for Kiner Falefa?
he was going to jump. I think I had him at, 28? You know, and those lists are done preseason, and he was added on as the, at some point when they needed a replacement. He was going to jump up to about 12. And that's about where he is on the Blue Jays list, somewhere in that top 15 range. So he obviously was making a substantial jump, put up very big numbers in Greensboro, which you take with a grain of salt because Greensboro is a great place to hit. But his splits were good. The underlying stuff was good. And he was holding his own in Double A. So, like I said, he has a chance to be a solid player. But, I don't think he's the kind of guy that you refuse to trade. And listen, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is what he is, but he's a solid big leaguer and can help out in a number of infield positions. I mean, he's played everywhere. Short term, assuming he comes back healthy, if there's still the need at second base because of the injuries here in Pittsburgh, then he plugs in that hole right away. But he can play any infield position. He was drafted as a catcher. He's played the outfield. I mean, you could really play him anywhere. So he's a good major league player, and they have him under control for another year. So trading Charles McAdoo for that kind of player makes a lot of sense.
Of the guys they got back, Nick York, Billy Cook, and Rinaldi Jimenez, the lefty for Martin Perez, who could be the most impactful player for the Pirates?
Guy who has the chance to be the most impactful player. I think he still has the
offensive upside. We lost you there for a second, Jonathan. Who did you say?
I said York. Mm. I think he's the one who has the chance to be, he still has the offensive upside to be an everyday player. I'm not sure what position, or maybe he moves around and he's in the lineup almost every day. But I think he can hit. And, he kind of refound what he was doing. I like Billy Cook. He's got an intriguing power-speed combination, but, he's 25. He's just hit AAA. But he's another guy also could be valuable because of the positional flexibility. He's played all three outfield positions well. He runs well. He's played second base. He's played a lot of first base this year. It's the first time he's done that. So he's added that to his resume. So I think he has a chance to impact the team soon. I mean, York will be in AAA also. You're going to see him probably play some center field in Indianapolis so they can see what that looks like. And he may impact the team this year as well.
Jonathan Mayo writes for MLB.com, MLBpipeline.com. He's appearing with us right now. You can see him at 93.7thefan.com, right between Paul and I. So, Jonathan, after basically 4+ years of tanking, rebuilding, whatever you want to call it, I'm really hoping that you say top five here, but I'm curious what you will say. Where do you, and they also, by the way, hoard prospects at every turn, and as we saw at this deadline, are very reluctant to get rid of them. Where do you rank the Pirates farm system across Major League Baseball?
We have to redo our farm system rankings. We're in the middle of re-ranking every list, folding in the 2024 draft class. So I don't know where they will be. They've been in the top 10, if not the top five, for a while now. It's thinned out some with some of these smaller trades, and mostly because guys have graduated to the big leagues. So like Henry Davis is no longer considered a prospect, and I know he hasn't produced at the big league level, but he would still be ranked pretty decently if he were still a prospect. So they're still top half, but I don't think they're top five at this point just because of the graduation rate and some of the guys that they've traded away.
When you look at who they do have, who's a guy or two, if they have them, in this farm system that every team in baseball would kill to have?
I mean, Bubba Chandler's the easy answer. He's the best, the best player right now. I mean, we'll be adding Connor Griffin, who's just signing today to the list, and I haven't figured out exactly where he slots in, probably behind Bubba to start out with. I think Bubba Chandler has a chance to be a frontline type starter. Now, obviously, the Pirates, they don't need a top of the rotation guy, but I think at this point next year, we may be talking about a rotation that is Paul Skeens, Jared Jones, Bubba Chandler, and Mitch Keller. Mm. Good. So I think Chandler, he's super athletic. He's still has upside because he's only been a pitcher only for a short period of time. This is a guy who also was a two-sport guy in high school, so he's still figuring out how to pitch. He's going to get bumped up to AAA very soon, I believe. And so either we'll get to see what he looks like in AAA, and I would not completely rule out that if the Pirates are still in the playoff race and they want to add maybe a bullpen arm, now short-term bullpen, long-term he's a starter, it wouldn't shock me if you saw Bubba Chandler or even Thomas Harrington make an appearance or two here in Pittsburgh before the year's over.
How about them apples, Paul?
Yeah. Well, what about Ashcraft? Because he's the name we've heard the most about.
Right. Well, because he's had success at AAA, and he was ready. Then he got dinged up a little bit. So I kind of put him on the back shelf for now. And I think they got to make sure that he's fully healthy before they bring him to the big leagues. But yeah, another really good arm. There is depth in pitching. And at some point in time, if they really want to try to go big during the offseason, if there are some hitters that make sense, there are some guys that they could trade, because obviously there's only so many spots in a big league rotation.
Jonathan, I'm looking at an interview you did last year, actually interviews you conducted last year around the draft with 29 MLB evaluators, scouting directors, cross-checkers, all kinds of people. And I think we here in Pittsburgh may forget that it was very much, at least I think it was, very much a split decision between Skeens and Cruz, where a lot of people thought the Pirates were going to take Dylan Cruz. So tell me what people were saying then, what you thought the Pirates should do, and what you make of Skeens so far.
I mean, I would love to say that I was all in on Paul Skeens from the get-go, because it would make me look really smart. But, you know, truth be told, last year's draft was a special draft, and there were five guys at the top, you know, who went in the top five, all of whom might have been the number one pick in this year's draft. I mean, so it was a very talented draft last. And you could have made the argument, I mean, listen, Wyatt Langford is a productive big leaguer already. You know, Dylan Cruz isn't there yet, but he's going to be very good. And I think you could have made an argument for any of them. I've gotten the sense in talking to some people with the Pirates, I haven't asked point blank, I think that Skeens might have been their guy from the get-go. They did due diligence on all the guys because, you know, you need to know about signability and things like that. And obviously, I've run out of superlatives to talk about what Paul Skeens has been this year.
Yeah.
I can't remember, as a baseball fan, having this much fun watching a guy pitch. Since maybe, I mean, I grew up in the Northeast since Doc Gooden. You know, and just in terms of the excitement, like, I can't wait for this guy to take the ball the next time because I want to see what he's going to do. And it's that same kind of like, any time out, this is the time that he could, you know, put a zero up in the hits column. And he's such a complete pitcher that he does it in so many different ways. That's what makes it all the more exciting.
You know, before the trade deadline, we heard a lot about how this was completely 100% a seller's market, and how the prices for all these guys was going to be sky high, and, you know, the returns, and there probably wasn't going to be a ton of trades because the returns were going to be so high, the asks are going to be so high, and all that other stuff. I mean, as I look at what happened over the course of the last 2 days, it doesn't, and obviously you know much more about the prospects than I do, but it doesn't seem like the asks or the returns for some of these guys were nearly as high as we thought they were going to be. In fact, I read somewhere, and this was like maybe like 5 o'clock yesterday or something, that there wasn't a single top 100 prospect that was moved in any of these deals.
There ended up being two when all was said and done, both traded by the Padres. Now, both of those guys were pitchers who are not having very good years and are probably going to drop out of our top 100 when we re-rank. But there weren't. Yeah, the high-end guys didn't go. But I think the sort of other side of that coin is the fact that the players we thought were going to be on the trade market from the major league player side of things that would have fetched the elite level, those ranked play, you know, those top 100 types, didn't end up going. And I think some of it was the asking price for Garrett Crochet or Tarik Skubal, you know, the two sort of arms who were mentioned the most, were just way too high. I had heard repeatedly from teams that the White Sox were asking for the ridiculous amount for Garrett Crochet. And I understand why, because listen, they could do this again next year or during the off season, and you know, and they can, you know, they have them for, under control for quite some time. So there's a lot of leverage there from those teams. So I think the asking prices were so high that it just was deemed not worth it. So, you know, there was a huge amount of activity, I think, in the overall trade deadline period, and let's call that the month of July, there were 90 prospects that changed hands. Now, not all of them were ranked, and not all of them were like high-end guys, as you mentioned, but there was a lot of activity. So it was more depth and quantity on the prospect, you know, my world, the prospect end of things, than anything else. But I just think it was more the major league players that were attainable didn't need that kind of prospect return.
Few more minutes here with Jonathan Mayo, covers prospects for MLB.com, MLBpipeline.com. Check us out here on 93.7 The Fan. You can watch the proceedings. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. So, Jonathan, I think it was Bill Walsh who said 40 starts, something like that. Maybe it was only 30, and you know what you have in an NFL quarterback. I would imagine a big part of your job is to track after you make all these prospect ratings, you know, what you were right on, what you were wrong on. I mentioned that because of Brian De La Cruz. I'm curious how you had him rated coming in and whether you think there's still room for him to reach his potential. I think this is really only his second full major league season. So do you think there's still room for him to grow? And when is it that you think that we can make an accurate evaluation of a major league hitter?
I don't remember where we had him ranked. You know, we split up teams, so I didn't do the Marlins rankings, so I don't have top of mind where he was. I do think there's still ceiling there. He's shown glimpses, and even this year, you know, there have been hints of what he can do, especially power-wise. And I think that he has the chance to get a little better. And the last part of the question, it can be a little bit of a trap, I think, just because we've seen guys figure it out at different times or have a good year and then a bad year, and then they bounce back and they figure it out a few years later. You know, I think because it's such a results-oriented business, this rarely happens, but to me, you need to give a guy like 1,000 at-bats anywhere. Hopefully, I guess 1,000 at-bats in the minors, 1,000 at-bats in the big leagues. It's an arbitrary number, but I'm thinking two-year, full year's worth of at-bats before I think you should be drawing any conclusions. And then sometimes a guy like that, you know, trades teams, or it's a new hitting coach. He reworks his swing. And look at what Nick Gonzalez was able to do. I mean, he was lost. He retooled his swing, and then suddenly he's a legit. So you never know when that can happen. So that's why I'm a little reluctant to draw that line in the sand too hard. You know, as long as you let me erase it and redraw it.
Yeah. One thing about the Pirates system, you know, you take Tamar Johnson out of the equation. I mean, where are the hitters in this? 5 years of hoarding prospects we've heard about. Tamar Johnson is a guy who's, what, 2 or 3 years away from being able to help them. Who in their system, I mean, where are these hitters at?
They've done a much better job at finding and developing pitching than they have hitters. You know, and you could look across Major League Baseball, and there are teams that do just the opposite. And I think that could bode well because the adage that you can never have enough pitching. So if you have pitching depth, then you can trade for the hitters. Now, whether they can make those trades, we'll have to see. You know, we'll see if Brian De La Cruz can, you know, maybe they kind of bought a little low on him. To your point, you know, some of the other hitters have not progressed as much, and there weren't as many to begin with. I mean, you know, I don't remember what my preseason rankings were, but it was very, very pitching heavy. Obviously, Skeens was at the top. You know, you had Chandler, Solomito, Harrington, Ashcraft, who's, you know, made a nice jump forward, and on and on. So there've been a lot more on the mound from the get go. So it's not that there were highly regarded and panned out. You know, the jury's still out on Henry Davis. It's nice to see that he's been swinging the bat well lately. I'd like to see him get another chance soon. But they just have not had as many. So it's, I don't know that they've, you know, pardon the pun, swung and missed on drafting or signing hitters. It's just that they haven't had as many.
Well, one of the big stories this year you mentioned, Jonathan, and that's people still waiting here on a top overall pick with Henry Davis. So my questions there are, did you think that was a good pick at the time? And who do you think will be the bigger impact or have more of an impact as a major leaguer, Henry Davis or Endy Rodriguez?
Wow, Endy Rodriguez is like almost forgotten, right?
Yeah.
Just because of the injury. That'll be like getting a trade back when he does come back. I don't know who'll have the very impact. I think Endy has a better chance to be a regular catcher from a defensive standpoint. Like, I know that Henry Davis has worked tirelessly. I think he'd be fine. But I think when all is said and done, if they're both in the same lineup, Endy catches and Henry plays someplace else, you know, to be determined where that someplace else is.
Even if you're the number one pick, it's a hard game. Look, Jackson Holliday came up and struggled for the Baltimore Orioles. He's back up again. Now, younger, I understand it. That draft class was a weird draft class. There was not a guy or several guys like there was when they took Paul Skeens. It was the kind of year where if you liked a guy and the Pirates really liked Henry Davis and you could save money so you could then aggressively get some of these other guys, then that was the year to do that. So I think for that draft class, it did make a sense. Was he the prototypical top of the draft guy? No, but you can only draft guys who are in your draft class. And for that year, he was arguably the best college hitter, certainly one of the best performers, and a guy that was going to, you know, cut a deal to allow them to go and get some of those arms that we've already talked about.
Yep. Last question here.
I asked all my questions.
No, that's okay. Paul's out. So Connor Griffin is the guy I wanted to ask about. What did you think of that pick?
I loved that pick. I really liked the Pirates draft class this year. It was a nice mix of going for high upside early with Connor Griffin and then Wyatt Sanford, you know, both overslot high school performers. Connor Griffin has a chance to be a superstar. Mm-hmm. And just all-around tools-wise, he has the best all-around tool set of anyone in this draft class. Now, there's more risk involved. Not everyone was convinced on the hit tool, but he had 4+ tools. Like, that doesn't exist. So I love that. And then even some of the college guys that they picked a little bit later on, they really kind of bought low and figured out this may end up being a very, very good draft class for them, in terms of guys that they took later as well. So I liked the pick because I think a very strong argument could have been made picking 9 in this draft class. So strong college hitter draft. You could have taken a safer college bat, probably save some money and been aggressive later on. And what the Pirates were able to do was both, right? They were aggressive early. Levi Sterling also, didn't have a great senior year. For them to get him at slot value in the comp round, he's got a ton of upside, a really athletic two-way guy in high school. So they were able to kind of have their cake and eat it too in terms of what their objectives were. So they went big when I think a lot of people thought, oh, let's take the college guy who's going to get there faster in the Paul Skeens window, so to speak. And they didn't do that. They took the best guy on the board.
Jonathan, great stuff. We appreciate you taking all that time. People are very fired up around here, and that was very informative. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. Anytime, guys.
All right, we'll talk soon. Paul, you heard him talk about last year's draft with Skeens, and for whatever anybody wants to say about Ben Cherington, positive and negative, there's both. That was a historic decision for this franchise that he made, and people should never forget.
Hold up. We won't know that for 10 years. I mean, it started out looking like that, yes, but we won't know that for 10 years.
Okay.
At least 6 or 7 years.
Well, I'll say this much. If he didn't take Skeens and Skeens was in Baltimore right now, every show would be about firing Ben Charrington.
Well, again, that's what we do.
Because he's the biggest star.
We're in the immediate.
There's Ohtani, Judge, and Skeens right now in baseball.
We're in the immediate. Again.
It would look right now like he made the biggest.
It would look right now,
like
yes.
He made the biggest mistake
Absolutely.
In Pirates history.
Absolutely. But the only thing I object to use the phrase of some guy that sent me an email today, the only thing I object to is the idea that we know definitively that he made the right decision. Obviously, he made a really good decision right now. But you often point out, you know, the Cubs guys and, you know, even Strasburg to a lesser extent, although he did bring a World Series. I mean, some of the guys that to hear Jonathan Mayo talk, some of the other guys could turn into Hall of Famers as well. So
sure, they could.
We have to see. But I agree with you right now. But we're talking about the immediacy. To me, you know, there's the immediate after the day after the draft. Then there's maybe a year or two after the draft. But then there's 10 years after the draft, which is really the actual story that's written. That's all I'm saying.
That story will be written someday.
But you're right.
Right now, it looks like Ben Charrington made the right decision.
Yes.
And as I
didn't think it was a decision. I get what what they're saying, but I watched the LSU play, and I was like, man, that is who I pick every time, 100 times out of 100.
I said the same thing, but it was 50-50, and
right.
A lot of baseball thought the Pirates were going to take Cruz. And if Dylan Cruz right now, or if Paul Skeens right now was doing what he's doing for the Nationals, the Tigers, or the Rangers, Ben Charrington would probably, I would say, be fired after this season. Because the Pirates wouldn't be nearly as good.
Right,
Skeens changed
right.
Everything. They would be a non-playoff contender. I'm very comfortable saying that. And we'd be looking at one of the three biggest stars in all of baseball in Detroit, Texas, or Washington. So for now, and now is all we got, I just want to remind people that Ben Charrington, I think, pretty obviously made the right call there. And
right.
It was either way, whatever call he made, it was going to change the trajectory of Pirate history.
Right.
So that's a biggie. There's the Skeens decision, and then much lower, in a whole different compartment, is every other decision that Charrington has made.
Well, I mean, if Paul Skeens was not the pick, this team is probably, what, 5 games under 500, considering they're 8 games over 500 with him, we were talking about earlier?
Let's ask Dan Zangrilli next. He's going to join us to talk Pirate trade deadline. He was on, him and Jason Mackey were on yesterday on a deadline roundtable, and both mentioned De La Cruz. Let's talk about that next. We want you to come back with us after the break to talk more Pirates in Pittsburgh.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Sport. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills, Dr. Daniel Zangrilli, brought to you by LGKG Injury Lawyers. Both Larry Kelly and Joe George are AV rated, as is the entire LGKG firm. LGKG, your home team. Dan, also brought to you by Allegiant Federal Credit Union. Dan, I wish we had the mics on for our little conversation we just had. Let's pick it up where we left off. We had a guy from Miami who covers the Marlins for the Miami Herald. He said no contests. He would rather have Chisholm than De La Cruz because he can catch the baseball, for one thing. He's a better fielder, all that, better runner. But I like having the right-handed bat. You expounded on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Cruz and Tellez, let's just talk this year, and even to a certain extent Reynolds, even though he's a switch hitter, though it doesn't apply as much, a right-handed power bat allows you to split the left-handers up. You wedge De La Cruz right in between. Maybe he's the four-hole guy, I would think, and I'm not sure Derek Shelton has been asked where De La Cruz fits in the lineup here, but I envision Cruz 3, De La Cruz 4, and then you have Tellez 5. That's a left, right, left, hard to come in match up against with left-handed specialists.
Yeah. Where,
like last night, for instance, they had to stack Cruz and Tellez 3-4. That's kind of you're playing into the other manager's hand late in game. You know, with a three-batter minimum, that's an easy call for them. Come in, turn Reynolds around from the right side, though he's pretty good right-handed, but at least you can get on the other side of Cruz and Tellez fairly easily, or you're forcing counter moves and getting Tellez out of a game and bringing Connor Joe in. All that stuff that has those tentacles, that trickle-down effect when we talk about matchups, especially tight ball games. Pirates play a ton of them.
Yeah.
That's where the right-handed stick plays. And that's why, not to say that, I mean, Jazz Chisholm, yes, he's a better overall player, but you're bringing in another left-handed stick to an already left-handed heavy lineup. De La Cruz, I think, for the Pirates, just fits a little bit better, lengthens it, and it's a harder lineup to navigate with that left, right, left, and just, you know, you put Kiner Falefa in there. The ease in which other teams were able to get through the Pirates lineup outside of two or three hitters was remarkable. Just think of the advanced scouting meetings. If you're putting together some sort of pitching plan against Pittsburgh, this lineup, not only just the results weren't there numerically, but just the manner in which you could carve it up, game plan against it, it was way too easy. Not anymore.
Well, I mean, again, I think they, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can break up your lineup. They got two guys in this trade deadline cycle that makes them a little bit better offensively, which is what you were looking at. You were basically saying, if you have the pitching they have and you just get a little bit better offensively, you're going to give yourself a chance. So, I mean, obviously, I would have liked to see them do a little bit more than they did, but I think they're better, right?
And I think some of them, the tertiary moves that they made, you know, even the York move, I think that's going to play dividends in the big leagues maybe in the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. Once he gets acclimated into the system, I don't see him hanging around in AAA for the rest of the year. So you have some depth there. They got a 25-year-old minor league journeyman bat. I think Cook is the name, and that minor league deal was the last thing that kind of trickled in, got swept under the carpet. Well, he's been around and is an upper-level bat with some pop. So they have some depth with some bats in the upper levels that they so desperately needed. So I think that not only did they get better with the two guys, which are grabbing, understandably, all the headlines, and Beeks is somebody I've been talking about for 6 weeks. Colorado, I think I even mentioned it with you guys. I want to go trade with Colorado. Elias Diaz, Jacob Stallings, and then the left-handed reliever, Jalen Beek. So that's a good move, too. They made a bunch of trades. It helped the big league club with, I think, three pieces, probably four, with York, if we're going to talk about what September may look like. And I think, you know, the Walker deal was nice.
Doesn't Kiner essentially block York, though?
Not particularly, especially
with Nick Gonzalez coming back.
When's he coming back? That's a pretty significant.
It is, but I'm just saying, you know what I mean? It feels to me like York was maybe the guy that was going to play that utility role if he came up. But now, I don't know.
I don't think it necessarily blocks him, no. I think you can move Kiner Falefa around here, there, and everywhere. I don't think he blocks anybody. You can match up against him. You can give guys days off with him. He wears so many different gloves and wears them well. If Hayes is scuffling against right-handed pitching, maybe Kiner Falefa. If you need some offense, he's playing third base for a night or two in a row. So I don't think that necessarily blocks York. I mean, like Alika Williams probably is worried about his job. It probably blocks him. But no, I think you could easily carry Kiner Falefa and York on the same roster. I do.
Andreola?
Maybe, again, this is a meritocracy thing now. Triolo is hit. It's amazing how we saw a level of focus and acute awareness, I think, from some guys last night in the lineup, almost as if a match had been lit. Now they were all trending in the right direction before the deadline, but again, it's a big system of meritocracy, and they've created some really nice problems for them to have. So whoever is producing, I think you'll be able to ship one out, swap them out interchangeably, and play a much hotter hand at the time.
Dan Zangrilli joining us in studio here. You can watch us on 93.7thefan.com. So, Dan, you mentioned you were surprised by all of this, that they actually went out and made significant moves. I think we would all agree that the two lineup pieces they brought in and the bullpen piece, but really the two lineup pieces, were significant. My question is, do you think Ben Cherington would have done this of his own accord, or did he get a strong push from Bob Nutting near the deadline or leading up to the deadline?
You know, I don't know. I think maybe the team spoke to him a little bit more as far as quality of play, and that I think Cherington made mention of in the best way that he can, basically saying that their recent quality of play, and of course the wins, that chunk of winning, what, 7 of 9 it was, or 11 out of 13, I think that, to use his words, clarified the math. I'm not necessarily sure that he would have been as aggressive unless they did go on this stretch, because we were looking at a team that just was alternating wins and losses, could not lose more than 3 in a row or win more than 3 in a row, and then they showed him something. And I don't know this. This is just me speculating. I don't think that there is some edict by the owner pounding his fist on the table, "We need to do something." One of those, you know, big Lebowski moments, if you will.
Yeah.
I think with the quality of play improving, guys getting better, you know, collectively, they figured, okay, the position in the standings, let's go ahead and give this a calculated shot. And he did it without throwing all those chips in on Reynolds or 2024 guys. I think the market corrected itself in the final 48 hours from a price standpoint as well. The Pirates, I don't think it was a coincidence. Most of their volume of work came in the last 90 minutes. So those factors probably led to the results of last night. You did not see them, the forefront, being comfortable overpaying on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or even Monday for that matter. Again, everything came very late Tuesday.
Well, one of the things then, and this is where my frustration lies with this, one of the things that we saw is that all of the talk about overpaying and, you know, it's a seller's market and the asks are really high. We saw guys get traded, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the trade deadline, and the asks weren't ridiculous. I think, you know, if you, again, I go back to the, you know, what the Yankees pay or the Phillies pay to get Austin Hayes. I mean, that didn't seem like it was a large return at all. In terms of it being, you know, the Phillies had to way overpay to make that happen. The guy that Seattle traded for, the outfielder that they traded for, they didn't give up that much to get him. And that was 2 weeks early. And all I'm saying is we were talking for a long time about this team needs help immediately. It could be in a situation where they might have waited too long. That's all I'm saying.
I'm imagining if the price point was what the price point turned out to be, they would have made the deal.
I doubt that the price point changed dramatically on these guys.
Then why didn't they make the deal?
Exactly. Exactly.
But you don't know that. I think
that's my point.
So you're. What you're suggesting, your hypothesis, is that...
I'm suggesting that if they could have made this deal 2 weeks ago, and it might have cost them the 15th-ranked prospect instead of the 16th, they're idiots for waiting 2 weeks to make it happen. That's what I'm talking about. The price point, I guarantee you, did not change that much. And I know this because I look at the other teams that made deals for outfielders before the trade deadline and see what the cost was for better players. So that's all I'm saying.
I see. I just have a hard time going with that hypothesis because I think they would have made the deal.
I don't think they would have made the deal. I think they were exactly doing what you say is, A, they were trying to get the perfect deal done,
mm-hmm.
which meant, you know, squeezing every ounce of every penny out of it, which is
so
silly.
What deal was not made that you would have rather seen them
well,
make
what I'm
as
saying
opposed
is
to the two
number,
that they did
a number of these deals where these guys...
For instance.
Okay, Jazz Chisholm.
Well, I mean, I just sort of laid out, they traded like a top five prospect for Jazz Chisholm.
Okay, fine.
So you wanted to see the Pirates give up a...
I don't give a rat's ass what name prospect. You're going to call out of the process. Ask him. Yeah. You know this.
That's right.
I don't care about
you,
these guys.
You were going for broke for Jazz Chisholm.
I'm not Jazz Chisholm. I mean, there's a number of guys like that were traded. My point is these deals, this idea that you couldn't make these deals until the last minute, the only reason you can't make it to the last minute is because you're trying to squeeze every single penny out of it. And again, whether it cost... 2 weeks ago, the 14th ranked guy instead of the 16th ranked guy, who cares? That's my point.
See,
my point is, if your idea is to try and win in this year, which again, I understand, well, you know, it's not just about this year, it's about the big picture. No, it's about this year. It's about this year, period.
I want winners, not sinners.
That's right. That's right. That's my only frustration is that I feel like the Pirates this year should have been far more proactive, far less conservative, far less like the Pirates do things, and gone and got some guys 2 or 3 weeks ago.
So what grade would you give them?
I gave them a C. I gave them a C, and here's why. I think they got better. I just don't know that they got – ultimately, here's the thing. We'll do a trade grade – at the end of the year. If they make the playoffs, I'll give them an A. If they don't make the playoffs, I'll give them an F.
So what if they miss the playoffs, but both these guys are great?
I give them an F.
So it was
because they didn't do enough.
So it was Cooperstown-bound Jazz Chisholm for you or nothing?
No. He's one guy of about seven or eight other names that are out there. Again, Hayes is a guy that there are a number of guys that were out there that they could have gone and I'm going to tell you, if they make the playoffs, then their grade is an A. If they miss the playoffs, their grade's an F. It's playoffs or bust for this year. Has to be.
Even though Brian De La Cruz will be here through 2027, that...
It doesn't matter to me.
Okay, well...
That means nothing.
Let's circle back 365 days from today.
That means nothing because guess what? In the offseason, they're going to lose Chapman. They're going to lose a number of guys. They're going to go get other guys. The team is going to change some. So to me, this year is all that matters. And here's the other thing. Here's the other thing about this team, and I've said this 50 times. Nobody wants to listen to it, though. When you've got Keller, Skeens, Jones, Falter, Ortiz, okay, you got those guys, plus Reynolds, plus O'Neill Cruz, plus Cabrian Hayes, for better or worse, right? You got those eight guys in place for the next 4 years. You should be able, every offseason, you should be able to put together a team that has a chance to win. But That's not how the Pirates do things. That's not how they look at things. It's how I look at things.
Well, I'm confused because you're talking about, and you've just laid out a really solid future, but then just in the same breath a moment ago, you said that it's all about this year.
It is.
Well, I think that the window is just starting to open, not close.
It's about this year. That's my point.
So they serve both masters. I fail to see how that's a bad thing.
Did they?
They have guys for 2025 as well.
Either way.
That's a good thing.
Either way.
That's a good thing, Paul.
Either way, this year, this trade deadline should have been about this year. That's why I'm grading it about this year. Next year, we'll grade it about next year.
Because so you're not going to factor in the trades that they made this year, next year.
If they don't make the playoffs this year, Dan, maybe I'm speaking of the wrong language, so let me try and do it in Spanish or something. If they don't make the playoffs this year, it will have been a failure at this trade deadline. Does that make it clear enough for you?
Sure.
F.
Sure.
F. Like Blutarski from Animal House. F.
0.0.
What if the trade... Why is it all about the deadline, whether they make the playoffs
because
or not? Well, what if the guys they got are great and the guys who were already here failed?
Then they should have went and got more.
What if Ryan Reynolds has a crappy 2 months?
Then they should have gone and got more. That's my
point. In anticipation of Brian Reynolds falling apart?
This is the only team in town that we don't grade this way. When it's the Penguins, when it's the Steelers, every single year it's about playoffs or
they
bust.
Got a guy.
We were talking about firing Mike Sullivan and firing Mike Tomlin because they can't make the playoffs or they lose in the playoffs. And the Pirates finally have a team that should be held to that standard, and now we're going to make every other excuse if they don't make it. That's ridiculous. No. BS. To me, it's 100% make the playoffs or it's a failure for this. They did not do enough at the trade deadline.
I don't see it as all related to the trade deadline. That's all. Well, we've talked about what I just said. They brought in a guy who's a really good all-around player in Kiner Falefa, and they brought in a right-handed power bat, which is exactly what they needed, who might be better than Chisholm, by the way.
And, hey, they brought in Nick York, which means they might win Baseball America.
You said you like that trade.
Baseball America Organization of the Year. I don't care about that.
I'm talking about the two guys they brought in. One, I think, is a leadoff hitter, and one's a cleanup hitter.
Can I ask you a question then? Can I ask you and Dan a question?
Yeah.
Because
what do you think that we're saying?
I don't know what you think we're saying. I'm very angry right now.
I'm
going to ask you a question, right? Is there ever a point when we can hold expectations for the Pirates high enough to say they need to make the playoffs?
Yeah, that's why I asked Shelton 3 weeks ago.
Okay, so
playoffs
then
are
you arguing with me about then?
I don't know.
Honestly,
their whole season isn't directly related to what they did yesterday. There's a million other factors.
My point is, you want to grade the trade deadline. You can't grade it right now, but we did it because you know it's something we do in talk radio land. My point is, grade it at the end of the season, and here's my grade. If they make the playoffs, it's an A. Maybe even an A+.
What do we talk about in the meantime? Nothing?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
We'll just wait?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we talk about it's an A+. I'll even give it an A+. If they make the playoffs, it's an A+. If they miss the playoffs, it's an F-.
Okay, so if Cruz hits 100 with zero homers and the other guy stinks too, but they make the playoffs, they get an A for the trade deadline?
Yes. That's how you grade it.
What is happening here,
City
Limits?
That's how you grade it.
I don't think they'd get a completely failing grade, especially because they have De La Cruz for next year, the year after that, and the year after that, plus Kiner Falefa for next year. But I would be significantly disappointed if these two moves don't push them over the top. I would put it as a D at the end of the year if they don't get in.
No. I just said if these two guys stink and they make the playoffs anyway.
If O'Neill Cruz hits 100, they're not making the playoffs. So let's go there.
I'm talking about De La Cruz. Thank you, Dan.
If De La Cruz, hold up. Oh, hold up, Dan. Dan, what do you think? Should the expectation be they make the playoffs this year? That's all I'm asking you.
No.
Dan, why are you been so pessimistic on the team the entire season? And now they're showing that they're proven buyers.
This is why my man in Claysville was mad at you. He said you're too... He said that you're too negative all the time. I'm just saying it's because you've been down on this team.
I just think that they aren't quite right. And I think I'm proving and I'm trending to be wrong. And I'm very happy about that, by the way. I sitting in the role that I sit in, I would absolutely love to see them make the postseason, right? I'm looking at this team that's going to be darn near close, that maybe is going to fall just short. They increase their chances with these moves. But these moves, while they are for 2024, right, they're just as important for 2025. And I see that next year, and I've been consistent with this, is the year. Now, if they find themselves and they push by way of quality of play and guys start to heat up, man, like, great. Like, that's wonderful. And they did try, but
we got to give Dan the last word here. It's 107.
Yeah. I think that they got significantly better. They improved their chances of making the postseason. But I don't necessarily find it as a cataclysmic failure that they were a playoff team. Was that your expectation going into the season? It wasn't mine. Was it yours? No.
Expectations change.
I think that there was a...
They're 38-30 with Skeens on the roster. If they don't make the playoffs, it's a failure.
Yeah, and they're 12 games under 500 with 60% of their rotation.
Well, you have
pitching.
To go.
Bye now.
Dan, thank you.
Thank you.
You've had some interesting appearances on this show.
No, we're talking about Ron's back hair, though, today.
No.
You are the best, truly. And you were on De La Cruz, too.
Thank you.
All right, goodbye.
What a dynamic.
What a dynamic. That guy's coming up next, and again, we're delayed.
Yes,
I don't know when.
Well, he was supposed to be at 1:10, which
Forget
is a minute
him.
Away.
What's 1:10?
A minute away?
Okay, then he'll be on at 1:20.
Scheduled Kabbali time?
What do you think? We're going to configure the schedule around Kabbali? That's not happening.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.